This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner, it's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here for today's interview episode with David Canfield.
Hello.
David, you got the chance to talk to Christian Friedel. I think my high school German has gotten me close to pronouncing his name correctly. And he is the star of The Zone of Interest, the Jonathan Glazer film from A24 that premiered at Cannes Film Festival. I got to see it in Toronto. It's also playing the New York Film Festival. I think lots of people are getting the chance to see it at film festivals right now. And for me, I think it was a real introduction to Christian Friedel, who has been acting for a long time, but really takes the center of this film in a completely captivating way. I'm imagining you felt the same way about his performance.
Very much so. You know, the attention, just given her overall year, has been on Sandra Hüller, but I think Friedel gives a really powerful and surprising performance in this film, playing a very difficult character to decide to take on and I think to inhabit, which we talk about a lot, just given the nature of what this film is.
Yeah, it's not just that it's playing a Nazi, which I think comes with its own challenges, but the way that this film kind of keeps its characters at a remove, kind of only gives you the briefest glimpses into who they are as people, how they feel about what they're doing. So much of it's happening with the filmmaking, kind of, critiquing Auschwitz. And he's at the center of all that, but the performance adds so much richness to the film in a way that's almost kind of hard to put your finger on why.
Yeah, it's just fascinating the way Glazer made this movie, which we talk about a lot. When he was first presented with the opportunity to star in this movie, he was not told what the conceit of the movie was, who he would be playing. He was only told it was a Jonathan Glazer film. So he doesn't even know what he's stepping into necessarily.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the way Glazer filmed it, it was almost, he described it like Big Brother in a Nazi house, which means... Yeah, I'm still processing that one, but it sounds pretty accurate because they had hidden cameras all over the house where they filmed and had these long takes between him and Sandra Hüller, who plays his wife. This is, you know, based on a real family within this proximity to Auschwitz, and it just captures their day-to-day life, and having to play that so mundanely, I think you really feel the effect of the movie because of the way in which they were tasked with acting in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, for American audiences, I know that there's a lot of fans of Babylon Berlin out there, but this is really a breakout role for him here. And, he's not the most appealing figure in the movie, which is a credit to his performance. So I'm personally excited to hear the interview so I can hear what the real Christian Friedel is like. I imagine he's a much nicer guy.
And he's not an imposing figure in real life, far from it. He's also a musician, which I learned in the research for this interview. And he's had a really interesting career. He actually played a man who attempted to assassinate Adolf Hitler in what was probably his breakout role. He got some nominations in Germany for it. So he's done a lot of different kinds of things. And I think this is the movie that puts him on the map in a larger way.
Well, I'm excited to learn about him and more about The Zone of Interest. Let's hear your conversation with Christian Friedel.
Christian, you're here for The Zone of Interest, which is one of the best films of the year and I think one of the most challenging films of the year. I wanted to start with a broad question, really about your relationship to this film. what it means to you as an artist, as an actor, and your experience of playing it and of, I assume, watching it now that you have a little bit of distance from it. How would you describe your relationship to this movie?
I'm really, really, really glad and proud to be a part of Jonathan Glazer's vision, to be a part of a really relevant movie, a really important movie. And for me especially, to be honest, I was really overwhelmed when I saw the movie for the first time, and I felt very uncomfortable to watch this movie. Mm-hmm. And it felt intense, and but I'm really glad to be a part of it. And yeah, and I watched the movie now 4 times.
Wow.
It's not a movie to watch it 4 times. I think this work was really unique and really important for me as an actor and as a human being too.
Mm. Yeah, I know people who have said this is one of the best movies they've ever seen and they will never watch it again. So wow. I think, yeah, four times is a lot for this one.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. Can you talk a little bit about how this first came your way, how you first learned of the project's existence and what your involvement could be?
There was an offer, I think it was 3 years ago. I had to do a selfie to introduce myself. Why did I become an actor? But without knowing the script, without knowing the role, only knowing this is for a new movie from Jonathan Glazer.
Oh, wow.
And I had to decide to do it in German or in English. And I felt, okay, I had to do it in German because it felt more natural. And that was good because I was the only actor who decided to do it in German. Because, fluently, German is my native language, and I love the English language, but I felt, yeah, more natural to do it in German. And then I had an invitation to meet Jonathan and his longtime producer and friend, Jim Wilson, in a pub in London. And then John shares with me his vision of the movie. We talk about the potential role in it. He shared photos, his investigation. And then I heard for the first time this story, that there was a family lived very close to the concentration camp, and daddy goes to work and kill millions of people, and this horrible story. I heard it for the first time, this dimension. And for me, from the very beginning, I want to be a part of it. So mm-hmm. Then I had a traditional casting with the late casting director, Simone Baer, and with my lovely colleague, Sandra Hüller, and to find the chemistry, to create what's this couple in this movie. And then John asks me one time, do you want to be a part of my film? And I said immediately yes. Mm. So it was like a marriage proposal.
a very cautious one at first, I guess. I mean, what's the emotional experience of that journey from auditioning, putting in a tape for a Jonathan Glazer movie you don't know what it is, to realizing really the gravity of what you're being asked to do? I mean, it's got to be a real discovery process.
Yeah, this gravity, I felt this gravity and the dimension of the whole movie, the whole project, when I saw the movie in Cannes. And it started with, I grew up with a lot of music videos in MTV, and I know Jonathan's work. And then when this offer was there, then I realized, okay, my God, this is a visionary director. I saw Birth and Under the Skin. And then, mm-hmm. Yes, that was really exciting. And the dimension of this character and this darkness of this character. And so this started with the preparation for this movie. We had a lot of conversations together with Jonathan and Sandra Hüller, and we talked a lot about the characters. The script was phenomenal. It was a really, really great script. And sometimes it reminds me on the work of Michael Haneke. Sometimes mm-hmm. you hear more than you see. And my first movie was The White Ribbon. It was long ago. And I played the school teacher. And there's a little connection to this movie, because in The White Ribbon, we see the kids, maybe they become the future perpetrators in the Second World War.
Yep.
And now I decided to change the site and to play a Nazi. But it was important for us in the search. I think all this shoot was more a search than a typical shoot. And yeah, to getting deep into this preparation to create this character, then I had to lose weight for the summer shoot and gain mm-hmm. weight for the winter shoot. It's a very important detail for the character and so on. And this was really intense. But for me, the most important things to create this character and to find this believable situation was the conversations with Jonathan and with Sandra.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And the way he shot this was, I suppose, very fly on the wall, right? Where you guys are doing these long, unbroken takes in the house, and yes. You are essentially tasked with living ordinary life amid this monstrosity. What did that exact experience and the logistics of that look like for you as an actor?
It was really unique, and I never had an experience like that, because we had the multi-camera system. Yeah. And sometimes there were 10 cameras. And this allows us to create or to find the normality or the documentary style. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Jonathan said, this is Big Brother in a Nazi house. it sounds, but it's...
No, yeah, it is.
We observe the characters. We don't follow the characters in an ordinary story. We observe the characters, and allows us to be in this house. We were alone, without technical interruptions, without technicians. The camera department was in the basement, for example, and Jonathan and his team was separated next to the set in a little house with 10 monitors, one ear the German or the original tone, and the other ear the translation from the... It was amazing, but for us as an actor, it was a really, really great luxury situation we have a lot of time. We had only two or maybe three scenes on a day, sometimes one scene. And we have all the time in the world to improvise, to find, to be with only the actors in the house or in the garden or even in different rooms. Or sometimes we shot scenes simultaneously in different rooms, and you hear your colleagues speaking in another room.
Oh, wow.
And to find this sometimes ordinary life or this normal, sometimes boring life, that was really, really a great experience. And I was not allowed to create this character emotional. It was mm-hmm. for me important that we don't see him as a typical evil perpetrator. We want to see him As an audience, you have the wish, oh yes, that's not me. But the challenge was, this is a normal human being. He's a father. He's interested in nature. He loves his kids, his wife. He has an affair. He's a normal. And that was really challenging for us. But this multi-camera system, this 360 degrees, sometimes you don't know which angle is important. It was not important to know that. And this was really, really great and unique. Yeah.
Did you have any concerns about that part of it being communicated? I mean, Rudolph especially is fairly, you know, mild-mannered, and his wife, played by Sandra Hüller, is she gets a few moments of more clearly communicated evil, let's say, than yours. But it does sound like you're putting a lot of trust in your director to communicate what we know is going on. And obviously in the final film, it's there in that horrific soundscape and some of these conversations in the shot of the museum, which I don't want to spoil too much for listeners. But what did it feel like knowing that the movie had to tell something that maybe you couldn't necessarily tell in that performance?
Jonathan said to me one really important sentence before the shooting. He said to me, it's important for the character. If you tell the truth, then lie with your eyes. And if your eyes tell the truth, then lie with your mouth. And this was really important for me to have this in my mind, because we don't know exactly what his thoughts are. And because the family lives so close to the concentration camp, the original house is there. And we shot the movie in Auschwitz, and very close to the original house and very close to the concentration camp. And Daddy goes to work. And this was really important for me. There were some scenes, emotional scenes. We see him sometimes as a perpetrator, sometimes very angry. But Jonathan's choice was to cut it out because it's not important. And I think to know that and to feel that, you said that this work with Jonathan was full of trust. I trust him a lot. And we talked about, sometimes it felt easy to have waking up or have a birthday party or something, but there was a difficulty in it, because Jonathan doesn't speak German, but he felt the truth. You can hear the truth. And I think this is the most important thing. What you hear is maybe more important than what you see, because there's two movies in it. A movie you can see and a movie you can hear. And Haneke said to me, the ears never lie. And I think this is a really, really good point. And I think this movie is, yeah, what I said, it's a movie about us. And I think the importance of the movie is what we hear and what we feel in us. And this is uncomfortable, but it's important to realize these could be us. This is inside of us. I cannot say, and especially as a German with this historical context, and so I cannot say my decisions in the future will be the right decisions. So, and yeah, this is really interesting. Yeah.
You mentioned the relationship with Sandra being pretty important to your process on this movie, and the two of you create maybe what I would call a beautiful nightmare of a marriage in this film, but one that really rings very true. How did you find working with her, and what did you gain out of that collaboration?
Sandra and I, we worked together 12 years ago in Jessica Hausner's movie Amor Fu. It was a movie about Heinrich von Kleist, and I played Heinrich von Kleist, and she played my cousin, and that was our first work together, and we had some funny scenes, really funny scenes, and we felt that we know each other for a long time, or we felt a lot of trust, and that was really helpful to create this couple, because this couple, sometimes we said, this is a professional couple. There was love, maybe in the past, and now they organized the life. Daddy has the work, and his wife, Hedwig, she's the queen and the house, and to create this couple and to have this trust and becoming friends for us in private, that was really helpful and important. And I'm admire Sandra. She is a really great actress, and sometimes she's an inspiration for me. For example, the scene at the river, and she said to Rudolph, no, you go, but I stay here. That's our paradise. That's important for us. And we had the freedom to create every take. There was every time one takes, and we have to change things or make it different than the other take. And to watch her creating this, it was really inspiring for me. And I'm really grateful to play next to her in this movie.
Yeah.
And I hope she will get all the awards for an Anatomy of a Fall. And
She's had a good year, but I think we can hope for the both of you. Yeah. I think you both deserve. Watching you in this film, I was reminded of one of my favorite performances of yours, which is in 13 Minutes, plays George Elser. And he attempted to assassinate Adolf Hitler. So you're very much on the opposite side there. But, you know, you mentioned being a German actor, being in this world, this particular period. What is your relationship to it as a performer? Is it difficult for you to continually step into this space, whether, you know, regardless of what side you're playing, or is it important to you? How do you find that and negotiate that over time?
Foreign German actors, sometimes there's a cliche, okay, you have to play a Nazi or you have to play in the Third Reich or in the time of the Second World War. And I had a lot of projects in this time period. And sometimes Haneke said to me, you have a historical face, and this is very helpful. But I hope there will be a modern movie sometimes. I think there's. It started with The White Ribbon, and after The White Ribbon, I had another movie called Closed Season, and I played a Jewish character, Fleet the Nazis, and it was really important for me to knowing this side. And then after this movie, I had the opportunity to play Georg Elser. He's not well known as a resistance fighter, but he's a very important resistance fighter who tried to assassinate Hitler in Munich and then killed just before the Second World War ends. And this journey now to play Rudolf Höss, to play a Nazi, to change the side. For me, the decision was all these people are human beings. So, and I tried to find the normality and to find a way to create this character so believable that you tell the stories of them and to make it relevant.
I know you're a musician as well. And I'm curious with a role like this, say, which for some could be very intensive, all-consuming, is it important for you to keep that balance of your musical side and your acting side and have both of those things even when you're in a role as intense as this?
Sorry, I forget one thing. I'm a part of Babylon Berlin, and it's the same time period.
Yes, you are, yes.
I played a gay character there. I love to transform. Sometimes I'm invisible and I change to this character. And Rudolf Höss is one of the characters I have a long time inside of me. And it was really, really hard to find a way to lose him. And the music helps me a lot. I like it very much. I had a promotional tour now in the US, and I come back and have a tour with my band. And this band was is my second family, and music helps me. Music is for me, sometimes I said, the most personal expression. But when I create a character, and even Rudolf Höss, I try to connect them to my inner feelings or something. And music is very helpful for me, because music is a key and an opener for me to dive into these characters. And to have this, both sides to compose music, to have a concert or to make music. This is really important for me because I need this. Only to be an actor, it's not only boring. It's an inspiration. I think these two worlds, there's a connection, and I think it's really important for me.
Yeah. I would imagine after talking to a lot of journalists like me in the U.S., it's probably a good outlet.
But I had it when I came back from Toronto, and I was there in the morning in Frankfurt, and then I had a concert at the same evening with the jet lag in Düsseldorf. It's close to Frankfurt. I had an energy. I don't know where, but my bandmates were really surprised. But this movie in my bag, to present this movie, and I'm so grateful to be a part of it and to have it in my mind, and the audience talk about that. And most of them are really, really excited. It's lucky days, yeah.
The Run for Revogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz. Who should be the mayor of New York?
We all support that. We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you've taken this film to Cannes, to Telluride, to Toronto. How have you found the conversations, the audience experience from place to place? And I don't believe you've taken it to Germany yet, but I imagine you're anticipating what that's going to be like as well.
This will be really, really interesting. It's unfortunately in February next year, right. But in Cannes I was overwhelmed, and after the screening, people on the street came to me and want to talk about the movie, wants to talk about the experience. And most of them said, this is a very unique experience you had. You have to react to this movie, and you have to feel getting into the movie. And for me, it's very interesting. I have a theater background, and in the theater, you create your character in the moment, and you feel this dialogue from the audience to the stage, and to sitting there and to watch the movie with other people. This is a really, really great experience for me. And I felt, okay, there are a lot of people. They had a problem. Maybe they said, no, I don't want to see the perpetrators. I don't want to feel with the perpetrators. I don't want to understand that. It's great to realize that. And the other hand, the people dive into, and they can't talk about this immediately after the movie when we had this Q&As. And that was really interesting. And then you talk to the people about this, and there's a lot of conversations and a lot of experiences. And this is really, really great. And you feel, okay, this is a relevant movie. And it's not only a movie about a huge, incredible, unbelievable, horrible crime. It's a movie that we realize the decisions we made defines us. And these human beings do this to other human beings, and we are masters of self-deception. We ignore the atrocities happening around us. We compartmentalize this, and this movie works because sometimes Sandra and and I, we were unsure when we shoot this movie. Sometimes we had a phone call, what we are doing here, is this right? Is it, my God, that would be a scandal, or I don't know. But then to feel, no, this is the right way to tell the story from this perspective. This is really, really great. And so, at the other hand, just a funny note, there was a famous actor who saw this movie. And after the screening, we sat together and he asks the producer, kind man, what was this part? And then the producer said he played the commandant, and then he was shocked. And that was, I like this very too. Maybe it's difficult for my career, but I like this, this works, and even a famous actor doesn't recognize me in private. Yeah. It's
that's how it should be, right? That's that's what you want.
Yeah.
I saw the movie in Telluride, and the audience was sort of, you know, there's stunned into silence. There's this long cut to black before the movie ends. And festivals are just interesting. I'm curious, like, say at a place like Telluride, how you experience just being there with the movie, if you got to see any movies, because there's a real conversation at a place like that that I think is exciting.
Yeah, it was my first time in Telluride, and I really, really enjoyed it, to watch so many movies and to talk about that with the filmmakers, with the audience, and so casual without red carpet. And so it's really great,
Did you have any favorites?
From Telluride?
Yeah.
One of my favorite was the documentary from John Batiste.
American Symphony.
American Symphony. It was open air, and there was a little small concert from John Batiste before the screening. That was a really luxury situation. And I really liked the Poor Things and Yorgos Lanthimos and Saltburn. And I was really touched from All of Us Strangers. That was a really
It's beautiful.
Touching experience, emotional experience. And Sandra and I, we sat there in tears. It was it reminds me on my own story. I lose my parents very early, and this there was a connection to this main character. And that was a lot of great movies. So that was really great there.
Yeah. It's a special thing, I think, to have a movie like Zone of Interest in a place like that, where, because it's a conversation movie, if nothing else.
Absolutely, yeah.
That does it for this week's episode. We'll be back on Thursday. Find us in the meantime at vanityfair.com, on Twitter and Instagram at VF Awards Insider. I'm on Twitter and on Blue Sky at Katie Rich. And David?
David Canfield 97.
Our editor and producer, as always, is Brett Fuchs.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors, as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.